Welcome in. Welcome back. Welcome back to Ontario, Marshall Ferguson, as he is joining us fresh off of the CFL Combine, fresh off of the week-long extravaganza where he avoided the stomach bug that was clearly hitting quarterbacks in Winnipeg.
I don't know how, because I was hanging out with a bunch of the quarterbacks too. And like Miracle came over to me and was like, ah, man, like I got food poisoning. And I was like, ah, that sucks. And then found out afterwards.
Stay away from me.
Yeah. Like I should not have been hanging out with the quarterbacks apparently, because I just thought that that was a good idea to be around them a little bit. But yeah, thank you for the welcome back to Ontario. I every time I go to Winnipeg or Regina, I very quickly learned why I love living jammed in between the Great Lakes or around a Great Lake, because my God, the air is the driest thing on the planet in Winnipeg and Regina. Those, I don't know how anybody gets through those winters without your skin just like cracking and falling off of your body in one large pile.
I will say the first time, like for the Regina Grey Cup, it was the first time I had ever been to the Prairie Provinces in my lifetime. And it was like, you know, not that bad leaving Toronto, like, you know, light jacket and pants type of weather in Toronto. And I stepped off the plane in Regina and it was full on winter and it was the driest cold that I've ever experienced. Like it was brutal. I'm with you.
I honestly have great respect for people that live there and just like take that as the norm. That's not normal. That is not a normal thing to have to. And it's like you say, in terms of temperature, I'm cool. Like I don't mind that when it gets really cold. It was really cold there for a couple of days when we were there for the combine. But for me, it was like I have a cut on my finger from cutting wood a couple of weeks ago where like a piece of wood basically like bounced off the ground when I cut it, jumped backwards and sliced my finger open on my knuckle. It's probably like a month into getting fixed at this point. But like an actual cut, a wound like that in that cold air, I couldn't move my finger because it was so dry.
Split back open.
No, yeah, that was the realization I had was that I had to just like fill it like it was concrete or something with polysporin in order to get my finger to survive like 5 days in Winnipeg. So shout out to everybody who thinks that's normal and lives in that every day.
All right. Talking about cold environments in Winnipeg, one of the things I heard Willie Jefferson say was, we should do this outside so they know what it's like playing in November. And I was like, maybe not the best idea for testing optimal performances. But as a sideline reporter, I thought Willie Jefferson was fantastic. So kind of talk about how that was.
Yeah. Which, speaking of people who think that, you know, Winnipeg conditions are normal, he just says we should do this outside. And Dwayne and I are looking at each other like, well, no, that's not a thing. But
that's how you know you've been a bomber too long.
And had been with the Riders previously.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think working with Willie was super fun. Dwayne and I loved it. He showed up early. He was actually going through like my prep boards that I had made because he was trying to like steal some of the information on guys that, and it wasn't that he had bombed in and knew absolutely nothing. He actually came on Thursday night, if anybody was watching the 40-yard dash broadcast, and was just like wandering around and hanging out and getting to see people. So, but yeah, when he was down on the field level, the thing that I found the funniest was like, Willie is super charismatic and could actually be a sideline reporter if he wanted to put the work into it to like refine and do the broadcast stuff. But he had no awareness whatsoever of the fact that his microphone was always open into my ear. So shout out to the production staff, because when we were basically the first 15 to 20 minutes where, you know, our producer Rusty says, hey guys, you know, you're going to have on camera off the top here. We're going to talk for a couple of seconds and then we're going to throw it down to introduce Willie so people know he's here and what we've got going on with the day. And then it's basically just Dwayne and I doing a half hour podcast during stretching lines to just talk through everything that's happening, some of the players, highlight them. And as we were doing that for the first 15 minutes or so, Willie was just walking around rambling, but rambling into the microphone. Like, he didn't realize that if he's going to talk to somebody, he can't have the microphone near his face. So my recollection of working with Willie Jefferson at the Combine will forever be, yes, he was super fun, but also 15 minutes of straight Willie into me and only my headset, until I basically pressed talk back. And I'm like, guys, am I supposed to be hearing Willie right now? They're like, yeah, we told him to be careful with the microphone because you guys are going to have access to him the entire time. And I'm like, yeah, he does not realize what's going on. Like, he walked up to Chris Jones and he was like, who's first overall? And started interviewing him as Dwayne and I were talking about things. So he was all over the place, but we knew that working with Willie was going to be chaotic and fun, and it delivered. So yeah, it was super fun being around him for a while. And also, I have to give a huge shout out and a thank you to Willie, because I actually sat next to a woman on my flight from Toronto to Winnipeg, who her husband had gone through, they actually had recently been engaged last year, and he has gone through some health concerns. He was actually in the hospital. She was going to visit him, but his favorite player was Willie Jefferson. He's a Winnipeg Blue Bomber season ticket holder. And Willie sent a personalized video to this guy because he's dealing with some memory issues. And his fiance actually told me anything that she shows him, like a Bombers highlight reel or showing him a Bombers jersey, like his Willie Jefferson jersey that he has, helps bring back his memory and helps actually help him recover. And Willie sent a personalized video, and she responded to me saying, like, it was the most coherent he's been in a while. His face lit up, all that kind of stuff. It's really, really cool. So, yeah, Willie is everything that you think he is and more in terms of fun and good person, which was cool to see in person.
Oh, incredible. Oh. Incredible.
Okay, before we move on, do we have an answer or a best guess as to Chris Jones is who's going first overall? Well, we'll find that out today if the guys can really ball or not. As long as they come from an NCAA school, I don't mind too much what position they play.
I had various
don't have sunglasses.
People, I had various people coming up and going, oh, it's DeBlanco, it's DeBlanco, it's got to be DeBlanco, 100%. Yeah, Joel's the guy. He's the guy. He's the, right, because everybody just goes, yeah, NCAA profile, and you know he's played in a variety of different places. And he's got a big build, and he's athletic, and all this kind of stuff. And then there were a lot of people I talked to at the combine who just said, sometimes with Chris, when it seems too obvious, he just likes to go the other way just to prove a point to all of us that we don't like, that we're not supposed to be able to predict exactly what he's going to do. So I left the combine going, wow, this is an awesome group of players. There's a ton of, ton of top end talent here. There's realistically, including the people who are not in attendance at the combine that we know are going to be featured at the top of a lot of mock drafts, there's probably 20 to 25 people that I think are worthy of going in the first round, in the first nine picks, depending on what teams are interested in positionally and otherwise. So yeah, when you narrow 20 to 25 down into nine, you're already kind of cramming it in. Then you try to fit it into the box of Edmonton Elks and what they're looking for and what their needs are. And I'm like, I have no idea. I have absolutely zero. I feel like I left Winnipeg with less of an idea of what the first overall pick is going to be.
Okay, can we talk about DeBlanco and his kind of performance? Because when I was watching, I was like, you know, he did not really wow me during the physical portions, but obviously when you put him into pads and you put him in a space where, well, let's face it, he's been a professional in multiple leagues, and these guys that he's going against are greener than green, he's going to stand out and shine. So how do you guys kind of quantify that and his performance over the weekend?
Yeah, the first thing I would say would be that when he ran his 40, I'm a big believer in body, like, and again, this is like, you know, combine niche.
Well, let's, okay, so here's the niche comparison. Who was our Alberta Golden Bear linebacker from 3 years ago?
Oh, that's a good question.
Josiah Shackle, who ran his 40, and we were like, he ran like a robot. how the hell does this work?
This is like the weird niche, like combine body talk thing that I feel like a lot of people who aren't actually weirdos about the combine will not understand or appreciate. Is the 40 times are a big deal, because if you are a Joe Joe and you don't run well and it looks kind of weird and unathletic, then it's a bad thing. But for me, that there's a big difference between seeing somebody run their 40-yard dash the way that I want them to run on a football field when they're actually in a game. Like, seeing them run, it's like, is that smooth? Is that athletic? Did that look natural? Versus, are they fighting their body for absolutely every single thousandth of a second they could possibly get out of it? And DeBlanco ran his 40 like a bat out of hell, man. He, like, his arms, he was chugging and fighting and just, like, just ripping as hard as he possibly could. And I remember seeing the time and going, that can't be fast. Oh, it was fast, right? Because it didn't look as though it was going to be smooth right away. And again, talking to various people around the combine, they basically said, do you want somebody who Yes is going to get there if he plays weak side linebacker and is has to chase down a running back to the flats that has to fight their body the entire time to get there. He can do it, there's no question, but it doesn't really look like when think about great weak side linebackers in the Canadian Football League. I don't, Simone Lawrence pops to mind just because I'm sitting here in Hamilton. Is like when Simone flies to the flats, he's like eyes are here, sees the like you know James Wilder Jr. from the Argos back in the day going to the flats. He turns and runs, chases him down, wraps him up, boom. It never looks like he's struggling to get there. And that was one of the things people told me about DeBlanco was they're like, can he do that consistently all of the time and run like a CFL linebacker needs to run? Because he has the time to do that, but is he just better off doing that at middle linebacker? Because that will significantly change the conversation around him. So that was the my biggest thing, Connor, from people I spoke to was, is it middle? Is it weak? And then basically, what do you deem him to be quickly? Because if you're going to spend a top three pick on him, you'd have to think that somebody's going to try and put him in the lineup pretty quickly. And which roster has the ability to do that based on who's on their team right now?
Taking this outside of the realm of DeBlanco, I guess, like from your perspective and the things you saw, who else do you think is worthy of being in this conversation of maybe not number one, but top three for sure?
Yeah, I think this is the thing that is fun, is a great challenge, but is also super annoying to me as well, is when we talk about players like Givan Manu or Nick Mardner, or you go through this combine process, you see all these players go head to head, they lay down their times, they're verified, all these kind of things, and then we start getting the pro day numbers trickle in from the other players that were not in attendance at the combine. We start piecing those together, you start watching more tape, and then the draft show on TSN on April 30th essentially becomes, let's get through all of these players that we didn't get to really see in person. And if they're playing, you know, major D1 ball or down south in any way, shape, or form, we probably haven't seen them in person in a couple of years in a real tangible way. And then we get to the second round, and that's where I actually start having fun on the draft show because the second round is where we start having the players come off the board that were the top end guys typically that were at the combine and that went through the interview process and that we saw in person and that we learned a lot about. So again, it's my selfish wish that we would have more of those players in attendance because it helps me to analyze things. But at the same time, there's a lot more quality players long-term, it feels like, that come off in the second round than the reaches that happen in the first round. It's the one of the weird tendencies of the CFL draft is everybody battles and struggles and takes 10 minutes to decide about what their pick is actually going to be. And maybe they trade up and maybe they trade down. And then it's the second round picks where people stop overthinking it and just go out and get a really, really good player that typically end up being the ones who last on rosters for 5 to 10 years. So, yeah, I think Mardner could be in there. Some of the UBC offensive linemen will be discussed in that spot. In terms of people who are actually at the combine, I am a little bit gun shy because I thought Francis Bemmy was going to be the star of last year. And then he, you know, we were sitting there like idiots on the draft show going, it's got to be Bemmy. It's got to be Bemmy. It's got to be. And he just kept dropping, dropping, dropping. And he didn't drop like, you know, 50 places, but he fell towards the back end of the first round. And I really like Daniel Opoku. I think he did a lot of great things throughout the week. Did he do enough to be in the conversation for first overall? Maybe, you know, kind of in and around that area. But again, I like second round when Tyson Hurgot comes off from Waterloo, that's going to be one where I'm like, wow, great pick. Because I don't really know whether these players deserve to be in that three, four, five spot, but teams will almost inevitably reach for some of those different needs that they deem rather than go with the one that I just look at and go, that's a really, really good football player. But I don't see things the same way that a lot of these evaluators do, which I'm okay with.
Glad you mentioned Tyson Hurgot because there is another defensive lineman from the Kitchener-Waterloo region that I want to bring up, Luke Brubaker. Like, how much do you think he improved his stock? Because obviously, as fans of the OUA, like we knew he was an impressive player, but you know he kind of went out there and showed the rest of the nation, like, hey, this is what I can do. Not to mention he ran an incredible 40-yard dash time at, you know what, 6'5", 240 or
Can
whatever he is.
I
Like,
jump in here? Did anyone
yeah,
else see
absolutely.
Michael Faulds tweet out and say our walk-ons are better than yours?
Oh, it was a
You
great tweet. Absolutely.
know
Yeah,
what?
yeah.
I'll give, I don't often do this, but I'll give credit to
Him
Elon. I'll give credit to Elon on this one, because my For You page actually pushed me that false tweet, and my For You page is a disaster on whatever Twitter is called now. So
Oh, yeah.
it sends me just the biggest compilation of dumb things possible. But when I got that one from false, I'm like, the algorithm knows I'm at the combine. This is actually good. Good. I'm glad I saw this tweet, because yeah, I appreciated the fact that he was saying that. But it was also like false going like humble brag, our walk ons, blah, blah. And then he was like
Well,
very
him and Aumanua, two of the
right.
two top prospects for Laurier in this year's draft,
But
are
then he was very
walk-ons during the COVID period.
kind about it. He was like, just kidding, but seriously. He was like, I love that he was like beating his chest, and then he was like being polite false. He's like, no, but seriously, like they've done a really good job. We're proud of these guys.
Well, Coach V is just like, I think Dwayne mentioned it, like Coach V has spent a lot of time working with Brubaker, and he has put in the work himself too. But to see someone go from never playing football, and we talked to him about it, like to go from never playing football to now potential top 2 round draft pick in the CFL draft, like that's a hell of a journey in 4 years.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, huge. And the reason I brought up Tyson in all honesty was that I felt like I almost gave Luke too much love throughout the weekend, because there were 13 national defensive linemen in attendance. Six were global, so you had 19 total that were there. And for a while it was when I was watching the one-on-one periods on Friday and Saturday, it was really easy for these guys to get kind of lost in the wash, because if you didn't perform at a high level in your one-on-one rep, it was forever until you came back around. And I think it made for a really fun competitive environment, and it added to the pressure of the moment. But we got a ton of film on Owen Mueller and Nathaniel Dumoulin-Duguay and Ethan Colray, even speaking of other Waterloo guys. Like, we got film out on film on film on film with those guys, because they ended up basically getting more reps. And it wasn't that any player got buried, but there was the occasional time where I was like, oh yeah, there's Samuel Obiang from Towson. I haven't seen him in like 10 minutes, like in the same period. I'm just like, what's he been doing? I don't know. He's been over there, I guess, just waiting for his turn kind of thing. So, and it wasn't that they weren't, you know, it wasn't efficient in practice mode and they weren't snapping reps off and all the rest, but you would see somebody like Luke have a great rep and the entire D-line group would rally around him and get fired up. And then it felt like forever. And if you know, if I get into conversation with somebody in behind the drill and I miss his rep, now it really feels like I haven't seen him in forever, sort of thing. But yeah, Luke was athletically, I thought he was going to be great, and I think he exceeded my expectations, Connor. That was my takeaway, is for him to run like that at that height weight. And again, I've had people ask me this in the past when it comes to the combine score and some of the different things I do with the testing numbers and the percentiles. They're like, well, do you have it weighted? And I'm like, no, because the difficulty in this is, okay, Luke is a little bit lighter than some of the other guys, right? Because he plays that true rush end, and he's even a slightly light in the backside rush end. But how much am I supposed to take away from his speed and testing and three cone and shuttle in order to make up for the fact that he's not a big, thick defensive tackle who's going to end up benching a lot? For me, I would rather just keep it all flatline and say, yeah, if you're a defensive tackle and you're not going to run as well as an athletic defensive end, that's just kind of the nature of the position. I value more when a defensive end can turn and run than I do for a defensive tackle to run a good 40. I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me. It's like an offensive guard. That's cool if you run a good 40. That shows great athleticism. I don't really care. So I think seeing what Luke did, even without the context of weighting things and knowing that he is lighter and quicker, I'd seen enough of him playing live in person that I knew he was going to come in and lay down some good numbers, but it was still super impressive. And last thing I'll say is the Yates Cup this past year, when he was dinged and he came in, when he was put in for situational pass rush moments in the Yates, he was so fast off the football that I was excited to see what he was actually going to put down for some of these times, and it didn't disappoint. So, yeah, I mean, depending on, and I haven't done the mock draft stuff yet, but depending on how many guys we think are going to go in the first round, really, in the top 15 as well, from players that were not in attendance at the combine, he could get squeezed into early third potentially, but I think that would be a bad decision by teams to let him drop that far.
Keep your eye on Winnipeg. Just saying. The law firm might be looking to retire or partially move on, and to slide in Brubaker, I think would be, that's my personal like, oh, I hope this works out, because then he could sit and learn behind a guy like Willie Jefferson, and how great would that be for someone who's so raw as him, right? So,
I'll throw this out as a random note from Winnipeg about Willie as well. It has nothing to do with Luke, but Derek Taylor, our fellow CFP podcaster, he said to me, I think I overheard him in conversation with either Jim Barker and Dwayne, or a combination of them, or maybe even Farhan that was there for a couple of days, where he said he went back through and looked at the impact that Willie Jefferson had on Jackson Jeffcoat and vice versa. And I forget exactly what the number was, and I don't want to spoil DT's wonderful research and stats, so I'm sure he'll give you the accurate one out there. But if anybody's listening to this, tweet DT and say, hey, how many sacks did Willie Jefferson have in games in which Jackson Jeffcoat did not have a sack? Because I forget how many games it was, but I'm pretty sure when Jackson Jeffcoat didn't play, Willie Jefferson has not had a sack in the same game. I think was the impact that I think that's what it was that DT had mentioned. And I kind of walked past this conversation from 5 feet away and went, whoa, is that a thing? And then just kept walking. So I don't know the exact extent of it, but it was something of that nature. And I'd be really interested to see where that plays out.
Okay, talk a bit about let's talk a bit about running backs here, because it's the age-old thing with the CFL where we see this big power back come in and the CFL just goes, have fun at fullback. And then we always have the conversation, it seems, every year where it's like, this guy's fantastic, but he's really damn short. And when I watched Herzog's tape, I'm just going to say Herzog because I don't want to call him either of the brothers' names and get it wrong. And Michael, right, is our Herzog this year. So for him, I watch his tape and I'm like, oh, look, it's Adam Macker. And then he comes out and tests and I'm like, yeah, that's about right. I think my comp was pretty good. But how did the running back room kind of shape out over the week? Because like I know there's the conversation of Peterson's true speed. Chris Aett came out and is this big monstrous lower body, and then Herzog's just like this compact little beast of a machine that's never going to stop.
Yeah, and like the I would say that lost in all of this conversation, unfortunately, is Jared Cesari, who I thought was going to, and then like Anthony Soles is not a tester, and Jim Barker made it very clear on a Thursday broadcast as well that his dad was not a tester. He's like, but he always just got the job done, and
Heart and souls.
that's
That's what Connor calls them, the heart and souls.
I knew he was not going to be a tester. The numbers prove that. I'm like, I don't care. No team is drafting him going, you know, I just wish he ran a four flat. Like that's nobody's going to be doing that. So,
No, put him on the goal line and let him score touchdowns. What he does.
right. And that was Jim Barker's thing on Thursday was he's just good enough. His dad was just, he was just athletic enough to make the plays that needed to be made at that point. So whether Anthony can do that, we'll see. But having him and Jared Cesari there from Queens, it felt like he kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit, and he did have a couple of nice runs on Saturday or on Sunday, I should say. And I thought held his own. Cesari, I'm talking about, really well throughout the week when it came to pass protection. He did a good job of digging in. His testing was, I guess, as good as it needed to be. But he was overshadowed by Michael Chris Ike, and I usually have a difficult time trusting people with two first names. So I was nervous when I saw Michael Chris Ike coming in. I have a thing when you have two first names that, you know what, it's a little weird, a little weird. And then all of a sudden, when he started popping numbers that I didn't expect, I just thought, and they might have actually found something here because he actually showed some decent hands, which I thought was going to be the downfall. When you see somebody who tests like that, that's at that size, you start trying to find the real weakness. And he's not the world's greatest pass catcher, but he was running through drills and on air and Skelly and you know, one-on-ones and slipping to the flats, and I'm like, you can get it done like at that size with that athleticism. I'm like, that's immediately applicable on special teams. You can put him on a roster. You can have him be your third back, basically, which is what was done with Daniel Adebooye in Toronto behind AJ Ouellette and Andrew Harris. And what did Adebooye do in his first year with less athleticism and less size? He dominated. He was a special teams ace. He earned his respect of his roster. And so to me, Michael Chris Ike went from what you're talking about, Wade, of, oh, that's a nice story, a big body back. Yeah, we'll see if we can turn him
Well, it's
into
like a
big.
big body back who is behind Thomas Bertrand Hudal, that like
Yeah.
similar school. So it's like, okay, he has not played a ton of pure snaps at running back. And then he comes out and just wows.
Yeah, I thought that he went from just a nice story of somebody who will be a hybrid depth special teamer to whatever team takes him, if they're actually interested in coaching and developing, might find a diamond in the rough. That was my honest thought when I saw how he came out of that entire process. So that was great. And then the Peterson one, everybody that was around there was basically calling him an undersized Brady Oliveira in terms of his college tape. And the top end speed thing, it will be an interesting conversation, I guess, coming out of all of this. But again, it's not as though he ran half a second slower than he should have. And it seemed like he was really smooth and not surprising because everybody, it seems like, that comes out of the Alberta Golden Bears program at this point is they understand how to practice, the tacticians in different positions. Obviously, the linemen have a huge advantage based on their coaching staff there, but being able to go out and do a little bit of everything and handle himself really well and with maturity and all the rest, I thought he helped. So yeah, there was a lot of there was a lot of upside, I would say, to Peterson in that group. And Herzog is exactly the same as his brother, which is I don't understand how the motor on those guys just never. It feels like you could put them in a 3 hour practice where all you were doing was full field kick coverage. Which again might not be a thing in the CFL, depending on what they decide to do, like the NFL just did. But the motor on those guys is crazy. Like if they were the size of Luke Brubacher, they would be first team All Canadians year over year over year over year because they would just get to the quarterback because they would refuse to get blocked.
All right. Connor, I feel like wants to ask this question, but I'm cutting him off to ask it first. The Alberta Golden Bears, outside of Matthew Peterson. I have been a big Daniel Shinn fan since last year's East West. I saw him in person and I'm like, holy shit. He looks massive for a center. And then he comes out and measures and I'm like, oh, maybe he is not that massive for a center. And then Tyshawn Blackburn, who I've talked about it with Connor. He's Derwin James to me in a Golden Bears uniform. He does everything for them. He hits, he covers, he makes plays downfield, makes plays against a open ball. Like, he does everything. So kind of talk about their weeks and how it's kind of impacted both of them. Because I feel like Daniel Shinn went like nosedive first and then play kind of stabilized him from there.
Yeah, I think that's
Whereas Blackburn just started rocketing off the start.
the funny thing about Blackburn is that it feels like in that such a unique defensive back group, which is again one of those things we notice the East West is everybody's long. Like if you're not long, it's strange that you're not long. Like Yanni Gudfeld from Bishops. Super long. Giustini, that's his own teammate back there in Alberta on the back end, like pretty long. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that were there. Arthur Hamlin,
LeBros.
yeah, LeBro, yeah, he's a long guy. Arthur Hamlin from Colgate has a lot of length to him.
Yeah,
Louis
a
Lafosse.
Dubofor, not a Dubofor is not a national guy, but like
Yes.
he's the definition of long.
Right, exactly. So there's so many of them that I thought that Tyshawn was going to just blow me away based on some of the things that I had seen in person at the East West Bowl. I don't think he did, but I just think that speaks to the level of the defensive back group where there wasn't really an opportunity to blow everybody away unless you put down like Benjamin LeBrosse numbers from McGill that you talked about. So the one with Daniel Shinn that I thought was interesting, I had a conversation with an offensive line coach during the week where I was trying to figure out center position in this draft, specifically just the guys that were in attendance. And like Ryan Berta is obviously a very stout, solid, accomplished player from Queens. And I said, well, what do you think the opinion of Shin is? And he said, super smart, very well thought of, good, not great game film, but I have just no idea how the hell he's supposed to stay on the field full time based on the short arms and the limbs. And that was, and you could hear when I spoke to this coach about it, just his frustration in I really wish that he was 6'3", 295, moved a little bit better because he has so many good qualities. But the concern was, okay, if he's just a center, if he doesn't have a lot of guard experience, like, can you imagine Sean Oakman lining up across from Daniel Shin? That's what you have to do. Honestly, that's the test. That's the marker that you have to use, the Oakman water test. It's like, okay, you're going to be dealing with these monsters, these freaks at defensive tackle that come up from major D1 schools. Can Daniel Shin block that person one-on-one if he's not getting any help? And the answer is no. Like, he's a super talented, accomplished, wonderful U Sports player who will get drafted in the CFL draft. But how is he going to stay on the field against those type of matchups full time? I've been wrong before about that, so I hope I'm wrong about it, because I think that he has tremendous upside if he can add a little bit. But it's tough. Like, I don't envy some of these U Sports players that you're going to be judged not by U Sports talent, but by the Sean Oakman waterline. So yeah, he's a very, very good player, but there was some frustration there. I think that everybody wishes he would have measured in a little bit differently.
Oh, I completely see that frustration, because I was sitting here and I'm like, oh, that's not a great wingspan. And then I watch him come out and bench, and I'm like, well, the number's not as impressive to me no matter what he hits, because I know, like, when you watched John Bose, the human eclipse, as Dwayne called him, I was going to make a huge joke about that on the 8th. Don't worry. But, like, you watch, he's got the bar all the way up here, and it's way above the rack. You're like, holy shit, he's moving this weight half a mile.
Yeah.
And then you watch Daniel Shin, and the rack's maybe a foot off his chest. And you're like, what are we? Okay, so you can rep out 10 half reps for John Bosa. Like, I was just so, like, oh, heartbroken to see it come through. And then I watched him run the 40, and I'm like, gosh darn it. It's something that could be completely out of your control, right? Like, genetically, you just don't have the long arms of your cross-province counterpart from the Dinos.
And my thing with that too is, okay, so yeah, he looks awkward running the 40. What lineman doesn't look awkward running the 40? What I want to see is the quickness in the 10. Obviously, we always talk about it in combine settings with the linemen, but then I want to see that quickness in the 10 transition to, okay, we're in the first team on air period, or the first indie period with the offensive line, which I went down to on Friday, and we're standing there, and it's like, okay, yeah, Daniel Shin is, you know, snap the ball, get off, and, you know, oh, you got to reach, and you got to get to a three technique, and then you got to get to the second level on a duo block and whatever. But it's like, well, Christian Cano just looks way more natural doing that than he does, right? And that's the competition that you're up against as well, is this is no longer just, are you a good U Sports player, and are you accomplished, and are you smart, and do you handle the offense well? It's, okay, that player looks lighter on his feet. He's the same height and weight, essentially, as you, but he has longer arms. And then you're dealing with the monsters, the freaks that you're talking about, and even Nathaniel Dumoulin-Duguay, who tests way better than everybody and just looks super smooth in all of the team periods, because, shocker, Lavelle produces good offensive linemen who know what they're doing when they get into an all-star game or a combine practice. So, he's in tough. But again, I don't want this to come off as, yeah, your career is over, nobody cares. It's very much, there is a spot for you, there is a niche for you. You will be able to get drafted if you're Daniel Shin, play in the league, have an opportunity. But again, just like we were talking about with his Alberta counterpart in Tyshawn Blackburn, I just think that because this class does feel very good at a variety of different positions, you're not going to have an opportunity to be, the biggest fish possible anymore, because this is a really, really big pond, if you want to call it that, of talented players.
I think we've kind of like touched on, well, maybe not. All right. We haven't touched on every position group here. And we did talk about this a little bit off air before we did hit record. Quarterbacks looked like it was going to be exciting, but then they started dropping like flies. We jokingly texted you saying, like, abandon broadcast, Marsh, throw some pads on. Like,
you got to admit, though, it would have been a cool broadcast if I would have been mic'd up.
Mic'd up, throwing
balls. What if they put the helmet cam on you, like Tua Tagovailoa had the GoPro on? Like, there we go. Marsh suits up, put a mic in his ear so we can speak, and like, let him rip it.
Have you seen when they mic up outfielders in like baseball and they have the broadcast talking to the outfielders? Like, that would have been incredible.
All you need is an AirPod.
It'd be me standing there being like, yeah, guys, I don't understand the play call, and I'm about to get killed. So
help me, John.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I'd just be begging the offensive line to do anything for me. But, it was final destination CFL combine quarterback. It was basically what it turned into, where everybody was, you'd be like, oh, what happened to them? And then the next one, then the next one. But Ezekiel Tiede stepping up with having a quarterback background, I thought was super cool, because I've seen a lot of players take on two positions at CFL combines, be it, tight end, H-back, or receiver, like Braden Lenius at that point. Remember when he came out and he was kind of like a little bit of a tweener and everybody was asking, what's he actually going to play? Which we all know now, obviously, he got skinny and got jacked and went to full-time receiver and he's awesome. then we've seen various players. The most normal one that I've seen, obviously we've all seen, is, are you a linebacker or are you a defensive end? And seeing guys take reps at all those positions. But seeing TA do quarterback receiver, I'm like, this is new. It's not ideal, but to see him step up and take that on at the last day of practice, I thought was pretty amazing. So we also didn't get word of that until we were actually on the air. And that was when I kind of eye rolled. And then I told Dwayne, because I'm like, that's really disappointing for us, because we wanted to showcase these quarterbacks. And it actually gave us an excuse to talk about the evolution of Canadian quarterbacking and how talented everybody is, because we have a receiver at the CFL Combine who has a quarterback background and not just at high school like everybody who's ever played university football who's like, well, I was a high school quarterback. It's like, no, this guy was recruited and brought down to Boston College as a quarterback. So, it was fun to see him. But, I mean, in all honesty, I was most impressed by Jack Sergiotis. I know that Bo Levi Mitchell and Jake Mayer were talking about him and all the rest, but it's really difficult to go from taking what you think is going to be 10 reps in a highly competitive final day of a CFL combine to now you're taking 40. And for him to take all 40 and have to understand the play calls and the reads on all 40 of them, it's one of those kind of unspoken truths that I have experience in from East-West Bowls and also being in St. Peter's camp in 2013. You kind of only worry about whatever is going to help you survive, because this is not your terminology. And from the second that they blow the final whistle of practice on Sunday, that is no longer your terminology. You're just picking up something for the week, trying to understand it well enough to get through and make some throws. So for Jack to have to take all of those throws and to adapt and to make some plays outside of the pocket and be creative as well, I thought he adapted really, really, really well compared to, you know, what I would have done in a situation like that, where I would have been kind of overwhelmed, in all honesty, by the number of different players I'm having to communicate to, the huddle that I'm working with, trying to, you know, maybe there's a language barrier with this guy or that guy, or but he just kind of seemed like he kept running back to the huddle and going, okay, next. And every time he went next, he would just come out, run the next play, and then run back to the huddle and go, okay, next. Seemed totally unfazed.
But you're telling me you line up and you look left or right, you see Mo Jamal, Del Duncan Busby, AK Gassama, like you're not going to be a little bit more relaxed looking around, seeing all Darius Simmons, all of the playmakers at the wide receiver position?
It's fair, but also you have to remember that
I
was a total defeatist when I was playing. So I would see all of my playmakers, but then I would immediately look at the defensive line and defensive backs, and I would all of a sudden go, wait, I have to throw against Louis Laveau, and on the back end, I've got, you know, Tyshawn Blackburn staring me down at free safety. And then, all of these players around the country. That's the thing. I think the defense was out-athleted, not a word, by the offense as a whole, and the receiver group as well. I found this really interesting. There were no players that were in the elite 80% or above in their combine score, but every single receiver at the National Combine was either in that yellow or orange zone, which basically means that you're from 40 to 60 or 60 to 80. So the average athleticism score, the combine score of the receiver group, was the best of any positional group in the CFL combine. And it wasn't that they had two or three freaks that were way up there, like a Brubaker or anybody else, like a Poco. It was every single one of these players is good. And what that actually tangibly means in the draft is that if you're taking a receiver in the third, fourth, or fifth round, you're still getting a really good receiver, because it just so happens that there's probably all in somewhere between, I would say, 15 to 18 receivers that will get drafted in this draft. And if we get any higher than 18 into like the low 20s, that would become a record for receivers taken in a single draft.
Okay, you mentioned him briefly. I had this question for you during the combine. Connor, we have 18, by the way. Oh, sorry. No, we probably have about, yeah, I think 18 or 19 receivers on the draft 100 this year
Yep.
for the first edition. So, the
Good job by you guys. Damn, nailed that thing down.
oh no, we it looks like a mess right now thanks to the combine numbers. But we usually do one before and we usually do one after, but there's a lot of guys that are going to be all over the place. One of the guys that I texted you about when the 40s were going off was, or after, I guess, when Connor and I were talking to you, was Louis Laveau and Kevin Victome, because these are OUA guys that we have watched just line up and shut them down. And when Jim was like, oh well, Victome's a field corner, and I'm like, well, that's because they don't really switch sides in their defense because they're so confident in their DBs that they're like, well, we don't have to play field and boundary. We just play left and right, and whatever side you come to, I'm gonna lock you down anyways. But watching those guys run, I was like, oh, kind of taken back. But then my question to you was, how are the technicians going to fare when the pads come on now that we know they're not top end burners?
Yeah, and I think there was a really cool sequence that we had when Dwayne Cameron from the Calgary Stampeders, formerly with Laurier, was mic'd up for us, that you guys will probably remember, where you might have heard, like, kind of under his breath, he kind of said, like, oh, they're going after Kevin, man. Like, they're going, like, Kevin's gonna have to get ready because they're going after him, kind of thing. And the very next play, he broke up a pass. I think it was on a corner route or maybe a fade ball down the sideline. But he they were challenged, I think, because, and again, this is the same way that I was just talking about. If I were playing quarterback in that final practice on Sunday, and I would just appreciate the fact that there's really not a weak link. Like, all the way through, you're looking at the guys that are pass rushing against you, you're looking at who's covering a defensive back. There's really not a weak link that you can nail down and say, well, that's definitively an easy place for me to go with the football. I would feel the same if I was either Louis Laveau or Kevin Victone, because I would feel like every single rep breaking the huddle, it was like, oh, here comes Kevin Mattel. Okay, yeah, that seems like a difficult matchup. That's not ideal. And then it's like you break the huddle the next time and it's Frederick Antoine. You're like, that's not much better. That doesn't make me feel any better about myself. It's like this endless wave of these guys are coming to get their catches and make their plays, right? So I think they dug their heels in about as well as they could have under the circumstances, which was, this is a really, really good receiver group. And like, in terms of being a tactician and being technically sound and all the rest, I'm not super qualified to talk about defensive backs the way that you guys are because you understand them better. But I thought that they played the ball really well at various points. And the one-on-ones were at times scrappy, not in like a, obscene getting into fights way, but there was a lot of hand battling just because the defensive backs, it felt like, were struggling to try and keep up with the receivers at various points throughout the combine. So if that's what you got to do in order to stay in the fight and be close to the ball by the time it arrives, that's what they did. And it seemed like it was really, really high quality competitive reps. I got to go back and watch some of the combine film to see exactly how those guys fared, but they definitely dug their heels in, is my memory of it from watching those practices.
All right, players that kind of went under the radar in terms of love they got publicly, but had a really good combine for you, were who?
Tyson Hurgot's the first one that comes to mind, just because I think everybody was so excited about Brewacker's the numbers that came up. And like, Tyson's production is crazy. We all know that. But like, how much that production doesn't buy you in a combine setting is kind of funny, because he could make plays. Like, I would actually make the argument that Owen Hubert made more plays on Sunday during the competitive periods when we were on camera than Tyson Hurgot. And it's like, why is that? I don't know. It's not like he didn't show up when the lights turned on, because he did it every damn time Waterloo played a football game. He's a really good player who's going to go very high in the draft. But I just felt like we never really got an opportunity to truly give Tyson Hurgot the shine that he probably deserves. So that's one that comes to mind for me. The one that just totally went under the radar was also defensive line. And again, I think this is a symptom of them having 19 of them total with the Globals. Ifeanyi Onyeka from Carleton was in the top 10. I think he was seventh in combine score.
He was in the red. I saw that for sure.
Yeah,
He was in the
like
top group.
in the top, that put it in perspective, there's 150 players essentially being evaluated between the Invitational Combine and the National Combine and the Global Combine. There's only eight people who in their positional group were above the 80th percentile in that elite category, if we want to call it that. And it was Luke Brubacker, Nathaniel Dumoulin-Duguay, Michael Chrisaik, Benjamin LeBrosse, Joel DeBlanco. Look, we've talked about all of those guys. And even in this podcast, as we're recapping it, the only other person from the National Combine who was in that elite category athletically was Ifeanyi Onyeka from Carleton. And we haven't even brought him up. And it's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if we just have like Onyeka fatigue as a CFL draft community or what it is, but he's a really good player and super athletic. So I feel like he didn't get nearly enough attention. And then the one that I was genuinely disappointed we didn't get to tell his story was actually the top rated combine score at the receiver position. Frederick Antoine was really good and he competed in a bunch of periods. But when Deshaun Mims hurt his hamstring in the 40, I think it robbed all of us of seeing him do what Kevin Mattal did throughout the practices. Because this should have been Deshaun Mims coming out party announcing himself as Ajoa thinks he's this guy, but I'm actually the one who could be the difference for you with my speed and my all the rest. So we didn't get a chance to talk much about him at Regina as a receiver. And I think that was disappointing because he will be a very good CFL player. I have full belief in the combine. When you're not in pads, it's kind of hard to give you a lot of love, unfortunately.
I'm trying to look back and see, but I texted Connor this. I'm pretty sure that Deshaun Mims injured himself at the East West last year too. Came out
Ooh.
and looked like he was going to light it up and then got hurt and we didn't get to watch him in the game. It was either him or it was AK. It was a Can West team with gold on their helmet. Was it
Deshaun
Mims, Connor?
Mims,
Did you
yeah,
go back
Deshaun
find
Mims
it?
did not participate in last year's East West because I have footage of AK warming up.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So we were like, we went and we were like, oh, this is going to be a show. Like Deshaun Mims is lightning quick. And then we got there and I think it was Jeff Cummings was like, oh, yeah, he hurt himself earlier in the week. He's not going to play. And we're like,
Damn
oh,
it. Isn't that
crap.
the worst? So, but here's the other one too. So I hate when that happens when you show up to these events and you go to practice and you see them in street clothes and somebody's like, oh yeah, he tweaked something. I'm like, ugh. Like I came here to watch that. Like I wanted to see him do his
Yeah.
thing. Like, right. Ajoa did the opposite though, where didn't have good testing, rolled his ankle in the three cone. I show up to practice on Friday and everyone's like, yeah, he's not gonna do anything. And then all of a sudden on Saturday, he's out there competing in all the drills, he's back in uniform. And I asked somebody, I'm like, what happened? They're like, when your testing's not great, magically your ankle feels a lot better because you have things you have to prove that your testing didn't show. And I was like, yep, okay, that's the way that that's gonna go. So
I want to follow up on Ajuju a little bit because you posed this question last.
Joe, we're gonna, is it a Joe Marsh? Connor.
Ajuju.
This is also the fun thing about the combine that the CFL really needs to rectify. Every single player that's at the combine needs to sit down and say their own name the way that they want their name to be said, because
Agreed.
we go through a feeling out process every combine that infuriates me, where this person thinks it's this pronunciation, that person watched a YouTube video where that person saw them talking about their own. As a community, we just need to have them sit down, say their name on camera, and so that everybody knows. I was told, and I am going off of the premise, Ajoa. There you go.
Okay, Ajoa, you posed this question to us. We talked about it a couple weeks ago on the pod. Friel like a milkshake or fraud? What did you think? We had our opinions. I think Wade and I both landed on fraud, just based on like the talent pool. But what did you think after seeing him in person?
So this goes into the category kind of like I talked about DeBlanco of running the 40 and not really caring about the time, but just about how the body looks when it's laying down the time. I thought, and again, he's not training to be a sprinter. He's training to be a CFL receiver. So I don't have to critique sprinting form. I'm not Donovan Bailey. I don't have a great background in sprinting. I don't know if you guys can tell from the way I played football. But when I saw him run, he was just stiff. And like stood straight up and was, and I was just thinking, if I'm running receiver individual period and I'm trying to get them, you lay down all the cones and they have to do the 90 degree cuts and it's get into your break and lower and deaccelerate and then burst out of your cut and all these things that you see at football practices every day across the CFL and in U Sports, I'm like, that doesn't look like somebody that's going to be super comfortable staying low and doing all of those things. So the other thing was I had a good conversation with a couple of different people who understood kind of his early days of being in Alberta before he made the trip down to Clemson and all the rest. And they said he's just always been the best athlete. Everywhere he's gone, he could get away with things. And I think we have all, not just us, but anybody listening to this, because this is a pervasive, omnipresent theme, I think, in high school athletics. The kid in high school who's more athletic than everybody else and doesn't really care about doing things the right way, that is often the difference between the person who develops into a great professional athlete and the person who just thinks they can get by on what they are and not what they should be with their talent. And I talked to a couple of people who basically said he's always been the most athletic person. And maybe that's part of the reason why he got out of Clemson. Was there's guys I'm sure that were at Clemson that were every bit as athletic as him, but just did things a different way and approached it a different way. And he might've gone, well, I kind of want to go do my own thing and just be who I am. So you go to South Florida and then there's a coaching staff turnover there and nobody really wants to pick you up based on the film you've laid down. So you end up going back down another level to the Jayhawk conference in Garden City. And I feel like his backwards movement, not just in the way that people thought of him coming out of the combine, but also in his collegiate journey, is due in large part to just relying on, well, I've always been blank and I'll always be blank. And I don't think that's going to be good enough at the CFL. And maybe this was the humbling moment that he needed, but it was disappointing. I know, not just because I was putting these huge expectations where he was going to come in and destroy the combine in every single test. It was more so just I had heard a lot of buzz about him and his journey. And I know he's doing things for the right reasons now, but I think there's some catching up to do. So he might not be what we think he is going into the draft, but my hope is that all of the talent and everything that got him to Clemson reappears and turns into a great CFL player.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you about another guy? And we kind of joked about it. Kevin Sklerosius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a guy, when you talk about running, he looked like he ran very smooth. But then you look at the web that you put up and sent to us, and I was like, oh my God, what is his change of direction drill? Like, he went like not 80th plus percentile in everything down to minimal. And it was like, how I always laugh at like these big long frames, because when it's great, we're all over it. And oh my God, can you believe how great out of a break he is and transition and moving from point A to point B? But when it's bad, we just kind of go, yep, bye.
Yeah,
and
just kind
of lock it down. And I feel like with him, the trend of these long rangy receivers that have been coming out of the CFL draft, like a Luther Hakanabanu for one, and you mentioned Lennius earlier, they are going to help him overcome that kind of error or flaw in his game, but he looked really smooth on what I saw from the week.
Yeah, so hard numbers for people that don't know. Kevin Sklerosius out of, I believe, Montreal originally, through UConn, 6'2", 217, 10-inch hands, 33 3/8 length arms. Even with those long arms, 15 on the bench, which would put him, I believe, in like this. I should actually check the percentile because I have it right in front of me instead of trying to go off the top of my head and remember all the numbers. 75th percentile when you do 15 reps on the bench as a receiver, but he's in the 93rd percentile in arm length. So, I mean, if he had significantly shorter arms, he probably would have been one of the more elite bench press numbers when it comes to receivers, which, again, you always have to keep in context.
He's no Nate Bihar.
Yeah. But to your point, slow roller coming out in the 10 and the 20, 40th percentile, 47th percentile, but then the burst from 20 to 40, 99th percentile. And keep in mind, this is not like some random hand time. This is electronic, digital, compared, like standardized. So that's not a weird number. His acceleration at the top end is actually the best we've ever seen from a receiver at a CFL combine, invitational, virtual, regional, any of that. Like from 20 to 40, he's the fastest receiver in the history of the CFL combine for receivers. With that being said, if you're looking for a wide side wide receiver who's just going to run go balls and occasionally you might be able to get him one, cool. But I think he's a lot more than that. And I would hope that he wants to be a lot more than that, which is why that number, that number was troubling to me. The shuttle, to your point, Wade, and you caught this, the shuttle was the 12th percentile. The three cone matched his 10 and his 20, which was in the 40s. So not a lot of quickness, not a lot of great change of movement. But if you can get him going vertically, it's almost like he struggles to get it from first to second to third. But baby, if he hits his fourth gear, watch out, because it's magical. And I don't know how that will play for him, especially in a CFL training camp where, let's be real about this, if you're a Canadian receiver and you want to not get cut, you better make some catches. And they're not all going to be bombs. You're going to have to make some 18-yard dig routes. You're going to have to get in and out of your breaks, catch a ball that's a highly competitive curl route. He's up against it, I would say, based on what we saw at the combine, despite the fact that I respect his game and think he could be a very good CFL player. He's got some evolution of his game, I think, that has to come. But his physical makeup and his combine profile was certainly one of a top-end speedster that was lacking significantly in other areas.
Yeah, to me, I don't know, in this modern age where we get so many wide, we get such a wide variety of body types and play styles at receiver and DB and linebacker, and we want these guys that are these physical freaks and can do everything. I almost take like Connor's guy, Gavin Cobb, a couple years ago, where, yeah, maybe he's undersized, but he's going to be out of his break faster than you can blink. And he's going to be able to run at the top end like you can. And he can jump out of the gym and he's got strong hands. And wow, all of a sudden him being short isn't really an issue. But someone who can't move when you're running those critical routes in the CFL, like a dig or a corner or a comeback or even a quick 5-yard hook, like,
yeah,
you're getting no separation. And you're relying now on your 33-inch arms to be that catch radius where, you know what, I may not be open man-to-man, but you can put it way out in front of me, you can put it above me, and hope that I can come down with it.
Yeah, totally. I always lean to the shorter, quicker guys in the CFL just because I would expect you to get more of that possession style from getting open and creating separation more so than I would from a player that's relying on their legs and their fourth gear to get past people. But yeah, Clarcius is, he definitely falls into a very specific niche category. And let's also be real about this. If you're going to have somebody who's a top-end burner, him running at the speed that he did electronically, which again was not a bad time because he ended up being able to pick it up on the back end, like a 4.59 at his height is good. There's probably somebody from Wisconsin Whitewater who runs a 4.48. You know what I mean? And also has a quicker 10 and a quicker 20 that allows them to get to that 40 more evenly distributed, so they're not completely relying on their top end speed at the end of their run and all the rest. So yeah, he's going to get drafted. This is the main conversation, right? He's going to get drafted. He's going to get an opportunity. The question becomes, what is the fit and how does he play through a training camp in order to earn a spot? Because he was easily a top five receiver at this combine. And if you're a top five receiver at a CFL national combine, regardless of who is or is not there in attendance in terms of your draft competition, if you want to call them that, of your same positional group, you're going to get drafted in the top 40, like probably in the top 30, depending on what the other positions of strength are. So he'll get taken, and then it just becomes by who, what does their roster look like, and where does he slot into that roster?
All right, last guy we want to talk about here before I think we wrap up, because we've been talking combine for the better part of an hour, but I guess that's just what us combine weirdos nerds do when we get together, is just taking each other's time talking about combine stuff. But Kevin Mitale, we got to talk about the I guess head Creighton winner from two seasons ago now, but big expectations on him, I think, coming into the combine, bit of a down year in the RSEC this season, but did he look competitive in your eyes? I mean, he had a few plays. To me, he looked every bit as the what? Yeah, he had a few big plays. A few. I'm being humble on his behalf here, but I mean, to me, he looked every bit as much of the Heck Creighton winner as we saw in 2023.
Yeah, I thought, like, his film from 22 is probably the best we've seen from a receiver in, like, I don't know, 5 years minimum. And
Phil Potts could be close, but because yeah, there was two of them sharing the same field, it cuts down significantly on their targets, right?
How soon I forget about the excellence of the Calgary Dinos Twins. Yes, that's my bad. But
I can't forget about it. I watched it live too many times.
but yeah, I think he this is how I will remember Kevin Mitchell's combine. When he came in and I was looking, because they did the measurements on Wednesday, right? So it was height, weight, hand, arm, wingspan, grip test, all that. Which, by the way, we finished talking about Kevin Sklerosius, strongest grip in the entire combine of any position was Kevin Sklerosius.
Okay.
So,
Get
like,
ready to play special teams, bucko.
immediately my thought was somebody's going to see that number, because I believe this is the first or the second year the CFL's been doing the grip test stuff. Somebody's going to see that and go 6'2", fast receiver with incredibly strong grip. I'm like, they're just going to want him to play specials and throw people into the stands.
Yeah.
Which was my first thought. But my first thought on Kevin Mitchell was when they did that Wednesday measurement stuff. That was the first like hard data that I actually had, because all the rest of the testing was happening on Thursday. So I'm in my hotel room in Winnipeg on Wednesday night, and I'm going through the preliminary heights and weights and seeing where guys kind of measure up, and going through the receiver group. I was looking at a lot of guys that were very similar when it came to percentiles in their height and their build and their this, and they got very similar hand sizes. And then I got to weight, and I went, oh, what's that number that has basically been red flagged for me? And it was Kevin Mitchell. And so I kind of checked to see, is this real? Like, what is this number that has been put down here? And everyone's like, yep, 229. I'm like, did he play at that? They're like, it's a little heavier than he played at. So I asked Dave Dickinson, who I saw on Thursday, I guess it would have been Friday morning, basically, how heavy was Anthony Parker when you got him? Because I know that on Thursday night, Jim Barker was talking all about Dembski, Dembski, Dembski. But I was like, this to me, this seems like Anthony Parker was a little bit thicker coming out from UFC, the same time as Matt Walter, when they had a couple of those really well-built guys in their backfield. And he said he was about 218, 219 was what Dickie remembered of him being in that spot. But there were only two receivers, and this is a funny one for you too, okay? Actually, three receivers, including Clarcius. There were three receivers in the combine who were above that 80th percentile in weight. Frederick Antoine, Kevin Clarcius, and Kevin Mitchell. Then I went and looked in terms of a combine comparable to the article I wrote on CFL.ca today about which receiver matches his build of being in the 40th percentile for height, but in the 80s for weight. In the history of the CFL combine of receivers, there's only been nine receivers that have been 40th percentile in height, 80th percentile in that kind of range for weight. Of those nine, five of them are from Laval. So Laval has a type, is what we have established.
What are they eating?
For very thick, well-conditioned, aggressive, good blocking, over the middle, not afraid to take a hit receivers. Which, by the way, off the top of my head, those receivers were Simon Gingras-Gagnon, Etienne Moisin. Who's the other one?
Marco Dubois?
I don't think. I think he was like in a different, because his height was
Oh,
different.
because tight end, yeah.
Right, so but it kind of outqualified him as a receiver because his height was different. Felix Faubert-Lussier was another one that was in there. So that's three of them, and then I believe Frederick Antoine and Kevin Mitchell were four and five.
My
So
goodness.
there's nine of those that have ever existed, and five of them are Laval. And I would argue that Mitchell is probably the most qualified of that body type. And if you remember, Felix Faubert-Lussier in Winnipeg was a really effective player. Like they brought him on, and he just kind of was making plays all the time for him, right? So I remember him coming in his combine, talking about the weight with some people, and saying, "Are you concerned? Are you concerned?" And it wasn't like full blown panic, but it was, "That's not really what we thought we were like. We weren't. That's not really ideal. It's not necessarily what we kind of want him to be." And then Thursday he goes and runs the 4.58, and everyone's like, "Yeah, it's cool."
We're all right with it, yeah. Jeez.
It's like, yeah, if he can run a 4.58 and he can block because he weighs 229, yeah, sure, okay, that works for us. So it was
What
funny to
happens when we get
see.
him into camp and he drops down to 220 or 215 because of how much he's running and sweating and miles he's putting on?
100%. I
That
was in.
4.58 starts to creep lower to 4.49, 4.50.
By the time he gets
really got a weapon.
By the time he gets to Labor Day, he's going to be flying. He's going to be dropping down to 210. But no, I do like the idea of being at 229, having that power. His bench number was good. And it's like, let's keep this in perspective. It wasn't just the 40. His shuttle and his three cone was good too. It's not like he was, you know, roly-poly and having trouble getting around the edges of the cones and all the rest. He was just being himself, but he was just doing it a little bit heavier than I expected. So it was amazing at this combine to see a 24-hour turnabout of everybody in the league go from I don't know to ah. Because it happened very, very quickly. Yeah. And everybody, and then at that point everybody just started watching him play football, and it was like, yeah, now we really don't care because he's awesome.
Well, I mean, obviously we're excited about Kevin Mitau, but you know who else is probably pretty damn excited about Kevin Mitau? His future employer, the Montreal Alouettes. That's got to be where he ends up, right?
Come on down.
I didn't get to make my annual joke where I walk past all of the RSEQ players taking their annual French-Canadian picture together, and I go, wow, that's amazing. The whole Alouettes draft class here together at the same time. And I did that for the last couple of years, and every time they're like, eh, whatever. And then draft night comes, and it's like...
They all get drafted.
Yeah, it is. Oh, Connor's guy. Okay, I guess not last guy is Kevin Mitau. Connor's guy, Kalen St. Cyr.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really, under the radar day.
Well, I think he got dinged. I think he was out. Might have been out all of the practice days off the top of my head. But I overheard him having a really good conversation with a CFL scout that basically said, the scout goes, I've watched you. I love the way you play. I didn't need to see any of you here. He's like, I don't care. He said, there's some guys that come here and I need to see the way that they perform on field, the way that they move in helmets and shoulder pads. And he said, I've seen you play live in Montreal because you guys are nationally competitive and winning the Vanier 3 or 4 times. I'm good. Like, we'll talk. I'll follow up with you after the combine kind of thing. So, yeah, everybody. But again, it's like, it's 1,000 different flavors of all wonderful tasting ice cream at defensive back, because it's there's really not bad ones. This is the receiver, and I actually enjoy this because the receiver conversation is the same as the DB conversation is the same as the D-line conversation to me, which is offensive line. You could argue that there are different characteristics that are at play, but those three positional groups, receiver, DB, and defensive line in this draft, people are going to get picked in like the 50s that have a great shot to make a roster, which is crazy based on the past couple of years.
We're certainly getting spoiled with some of these skill positions, highlighting the benefits of the Canadian game at the university level. And speaking of that, Con and I got OUA schedule released to talk about next episode. Yes. Quick note, Connor, don't look now, but DA is heading back to Waterloo week one to face off against his old team in Coach Burt.
We'll get there. We'll get there later in the week.
What a tease. What a tease for the next episode.
But with that being said, thank you to Marshall for joining us. As always, Connor R. O'Neill at Wade Zank at CF Perspective, TSN underscore Marsh, if I believe the underscore is still there. Don't forget about our lovely sponsor of Fox40.com. Head over to that website. Get 15% off all your whistle and coaching needs for the summer. CFP15 at checkout gets you 15% off the worldwide leader in whistle tech, so make sure you check it out. Again,